WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the show on the road. We're going to be at Pappas next Tuesday with Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll be giving away the Ravens scratch-offs beginning on the 15th at Fadley's. I still have some 50th anniversary scratch-offs, as well as our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, taking care of that. We're celebrating 25 years here of doing this. It's been a lot of bad baseball that I've had here over 25 years since 1998 when we took over WNST. This guy I've been reading for years and years and years. He's got a long Philly history and lineage as a fan, but has been in the space of covering Major League Baseball for a long, long time at the New York Times. He has made the transition over the wall to the Athletic, I think this week, but his story on John Angelos and Tyler Kepner, I'll tell you this, John Angelos doesn't spend time with me, so he must love those New York Times reporters. Look, it was clearly from his perspective some sort of planted story to get together with you to make it look good or get his story out in a way that he doesn't feel the Baltimore Banner or the Examiner can do it. I was shocked to see it. I didn't know you were here. How are you? It's baseball season. We're in first place. We should be talking about that, right?
Yeah, it's been a great season for the Orioles, man. It got a little preview last year when they started to make some real progress. And this year's been very exciting. You know, I try to watch them when I can. I was down there for that Mets series and that was a lot of fun. So yeah, it's great to see the revival down there.
Give me peel back the onion for how the story happened, because John Angelos doesn't talk to anybody, and when he does, he's usually quite embarrassing. It's Jeff Zrebeck, your former comrade, I should say, because he's not Dan Connolly. I'm mixing up sports at this point. Dan Connolly got chewed on by him on Martin Luther King Day, which was, I mean, every time John has spoken, and I've witnessed this for 30 years, it's just he's an introvert. Let's start with that. I don't think he's at all comfortable with fame, famous, being in front of things, leading things. It's always a little awkward with him, but you came in, did you know him at all?
No, I had never, I had never met him. We talked early in the season when they were in New York, spent a little time just kind of getting to know him a little bit. But just for background, just kind of a casual thing. And then went down there in August and sat with him in the dugout for about an hour and, saw him up in a suite and just kind of got the got a little bit of a feel for him. And certainly he wanted to talk about the ballpark project and get his vision out there. I wrote the story.
Is there any point where you got a vision of what that is going to look like other than over the hill and what they did in Atlanta or what they're doing in Chicago, or what they did in San Diego? Like there's been no blueprint for this. And I came back from the beach. I was with every politician in the state last week talking about this. They're all talking to me about it, but the tunnel underneath of the land is really problematic in regard to what you can build. Obviously, the parity clause with Steve Bisciotti is beyond problematic. Obviously, asking for $300 million more that doesn't exist that would have to go to Steve is problematic. But then there's the what happens to 4,000 parking spots that Steve Bisciotti's been promised of open air. So there's all of this. And I love the vision. And I live here. And I love it. And I've been to Atlanta. I've been to these places where I've seen what Bob Kraft did in the parking lot up in Foxborough. So I see these larger than life projects. I haven't seen the project. I love that he's thinking that way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can think and plan and dream on whatever you want. And then there's the reality of trying to get it accomplished and you could write volumes on all the particular difficulties and all the clauses and all the political stuff that you've got to navigate.
In this case, there's just not a lot of land. I mean, that's, I guess my point.
Well, yeah. I mean, but they talk about the parking lots, but then, cause there's plenty of parking in downtown Baltimore, maybe, in Angelos's mind, you don't need all those parking lots, but the Ravens want them. And then they've got to have them there in the contract. And if not, you're going to have to figure out a way. So again, that's what I mean. There's so many particulars that you could spend several articles worth just going through all the little particulars. So and that's not for me to figure out, that's for him to figure out. He wanted to share his vision. I thought it was important to get get him on the record talking about the issue as he sees it. And then as far as working out all the details and stuff, that, you know, that's up to him. I mean, I wasn't going to explain all the ins and outs of everything. You know, all the little details. I didn't want to get lost in the weeds.
Well, you weren't there to question him in that way, right? Like what
the I can question whatever is. I wanted. I mean, I could ask him whatever I wanted, you know, you know, we talked a lot. I mean, you know, you can't fit everything into the story, but yeah, I mean, you know, he wanted, this is the only point that the Orioles are going to have any kind of option at all to expand on the Camden Yards footprint, right? This is the only, you know, they're between leases essentially. So this is the time when he can lay out his vision and try to get something done. The public private partnership, the words that they use a lot. So yeah, this is the time when he wants to try to push that. And you know, I'll see, you know, we'll all see if the governor and the Ravens and everybody can figure it out. I don't know, it seems a little bit of a long shot, but you know, you can understand why they want it, because you know, they'd like to get more revenue streams and do it in a way that theoretically could be a win-win.
Underpinning all this is just 30 years of his father owning the team. The lawsuit with suing all of the partners of Major League Baseball, pretty much pissing everybody off. My understanding is there's not a lot of relationship between John Angelos and most people in Major League Baseball in any way. But Bill Cole was on earlier from Cole Roofing, and he brought this point up. And I thought this was interesting, that John is sort of speaking for all the owners, right? Like, this is the way we're going to need to do it in Milwaukee. This is the way that the next round, it's almost like when Lamar was trying to get the quarterback deal here, he's paving the way for everyone else that's coming after him. John coming to the New York Times and spending time with you and saying, this is the vision, and poor mouthing from the fans' perspective. Certainly the timing this week of your story has been a bombshell for Orioles fans here, just sort of in the, oh, he's not going to pay Rod Schmidt, he's not going to pay Henderson, he's crying poor. And then you start to do the math on all the shared revenue, and it starts to look like they brought in about $300 million of revenue that we don't see in hot dogs or empty bodies in the stadium from revenue streams, BAM, shared revenue, TV, national TV, all of that comes in. For him to say, we can't afford this sitting on a $60 million payroll, it is interesting that he's sort of the now dog to get a great deal done that may pave the way and may make the other owners who don't like him very much more happy in the end, that he is speaking for baseball, that it can't just be about skyboxes and tickets anymore for us to be able to survive against the big bad Yankees and the Red Sox.
Yeah. I mean, certainly teams have a lot of revenue streams and the value of the value of the franchise is not cash on hand, but certainly it's like, you know, you're sitting on an asset that's worth billions. So, you know, theoretically, if you ever want to sell it, you'd make a ton of money. So, you know, he talked about showing, you know, if I were to show you the financials, which is what he told Dan back in January.
Actually, he promised to show Dan the financials.
Right. I mean, it was essentially the same idea, the same, concept of, hey, if only you could see these. And back then he said he would, but he didn't, obviously.
Did you ask him to show them or no? Or did you bring that up?
I know where that's going.
Right.
You know, empty promises, but, you know, but it's this idea that, boy, if only you could see, what I see, then you would know that just how hard it is. So I don't know. I mean, all I know is I look around, I see all the other, pretty much all the other franchises really, at least signing one or two guys long-term. Not that it's easy, right? I mean, you know, you got to find a deal that fits both sides and everything, but like, you know, in Cleveland, they got Jose Ramirez for a long time. In Tampa, they have Wander Franco. Not that that's, you know, that's its own can of worms right now.
Well, that is the new model. The new model is not letting Manny Machado get away the first time, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, San Diego with Tatis Jr. and the Braves with all of their guys, and Corbin Carroll in Arizona, and Cincinnati has signed some guys even. So, you know, that's what teams are doing, and the Orioles haven't done that with anybody yet. And so that, to me, was what interested me in the story, because, you know, ballpark politics are what they are. They go on in every city. It's not super interesting until something really gets done, or there's something shovel on the ground sort of thing. I've experienced that with the whole Oakland situation. Wherever there was like a pivot point, you know, the A's would want to do some big story and get their vision out there, but it was just sort of like nothing ever happened, and it got kind of boring after a while, until they said, you know what, we're going to Vegas for sure, and then it becomes interesting. So the point is, what really interested me about the Orioles is that they've got this great young team, and how do they see it? How do they see their long-term future here? And that is the ability to keep these guys. And you know, it's interesting from a neutral observer's perspective, and it's frustrating from an Oriole fan perspective to see that their sort of self-image now is with the small market teams, you know, with the Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Oakland, Tampa crowd, Cleveland. And so, you know, I kind of had imagined Baltimore, and I think the Oriole fans probably too, is more of a middle market, you know, not New York or LA certainly, but also not Tampa. And I think, you know, if you're going to have a Tampa model, then you're not really going to keep these guys, and you're going to have a very low payroll perpetually and a lot of turnover.
Well, the other part of this is that he owes the Lerner family a lot of money, right? And the entanglement that I've covered every day, Tyler, for 18 years, you know, since the thing was birthed in 2005 and the Washington Post was screaming antitrust, and it happened, and they were playing games in San Juan, that the Nationals happened. And Peter sat with me once in his life for hours and drank, and I have it all on tape. And one of the real deep conversations was, we don't believe in baseball in Washington. Why? That'll make us like the Bay Area. You'll have two poor teams. Now, that was before Pac Bell was built in San Francisco and all that. We go back to 1997. So I am the historian on all of this, and I'm dying to know how this is going to turn out in the end. Everybody has told me that the Angelos family is going to get forced out of the ownership here, and that the Nashville thing that his brother alleged in the lawsuit last year, That's a weird vision unto itself, because Cumberland County gave the Titans $2 billion. There would be no money there for baseball in that case. But watching Oakland, and you've covered this Oakland thing, as to what Oakland eventually will do, and they don't move baseball franchises, right? We know that. But that could open a real can of worms that John would keep his eye on the real value of his franchise, which cannot be maximized in an empty parking lot in Baltimore.
Right. I mean, you know, in Nashville, as you point out, it's not like they have a ready-made baseball stadium. It's not like, you know, the real stalking horse many years ago was Tampa, because they built that stadium and it was just sitting there empty. And Nashville doesn't have that yet. But, you know, you see teams now sort of hinting every time there's a stadium thing now, just the beginnings of one, whether it's Milwaukee or the White Sox or the Orioles, you know, you start here in Nashville, and obviously, you know, John has a home down there and everything, so people get worried, and obviously the scars of the Colts from many years ago, you know, never go away. But I didn't get for a moment any insinuation or any suggestion that, you know, they were going to leave Baltimore. It was just sort of like, well, can we make this vision work here in Baltimore? And if not, then, you know, then what? That then you don't get to keep the players as long, or you choose not to keep the players as long. You know, that's the big issue, right? Is whether it's a choice or whether it's a necessity, and something that's really hard to know for sure. But I think, you know, there's a strong case that you could make that, you know, you sign these guys and then hope that you keep winning and then you make more money and then everybody's happy. And maybe you do run some losses a little bit, but you could always gain those back if you want to sell the team. So, you know, he came out and said he does not want to run losses. And that's not really what a fan base wants to hear. Then again, it's not like spending money guarantees anything. Look at the Mets and Yankees this year. Look at the Padres this year. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do it. But certainly, if you're just falling in love with this young team, you'd like to know that you'll have these guys to root for a while.
Tyler Kepner wrote the piece in the New York Times. He'll be writing lots of pieces in The Athletic and out on the website for The Athletic. And you can follow him out on social media. Longtime baseball insider. Spending time with John, so I've literally never spent 2 minutes with John. John has always declined to even shake my hand over 32 years, going back to spring trainings in 96, 97, when he was involved in signing Sid Fernandez and Chris Sabo. Does he, in his mind, when he speaks to you, does he feel like he's going to own the team 10 years from now? Does he speak in those terms of the team will always be his?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get any sense that he was interested in unloading it.
Fair enough.
You know, but I didn't ask him that question directly. You know, 10 years from now, where do you see yourself? Or 20 years from now, where do you see yourself? But I do think this is the kind of thing where it's tied up in wanting to have a legacy, you know, wanting to do something, obviously to make more money. But wanting to have something where you can point to and say, you know, I did this. This was a vision that I had along with other people, and we made it work. The evolving Camden Yards from where it was at the forefront of the everything that every owner in every sport wanted, to sort of catching up to now what every owner in every sport wants, which is this little city within a city, whether it's feasible or not. They got to figure that out. But I think he'd like that to be, you know, something of a legacy, where you can have something that you can point to, win or lose, that everybody likes. And also along with that, make it easier to keep this winning team going. I think it's all connected in his mind and in his vision, which is you get this ballpark village sort of thing. You get more revenues, it's good for the community, and therefore the team has a better chance to stay good for a while. I don't know if, again, that's for other people to figure out if that works, but that's the way they're presenting it.
A rare visit with John Angelos and some insights. You can go read the piece at the New York Times. I highly encourage that. It angered a lot of fans about money and about spending money and not running losses. Tyler, I'll say this. I've written a book on Peter, the Peter Principles. You can go check out. And I did a lot of research on this 10 years ago when the team got good again, like in the Buck Showalter era, 12 and 13. I sat with the people who knew, and Peter ran awful losses. Like in 2001, 2, 3, 4, before Masson happened, he was chewing on $25, $40 million a year that he literally was pulling out of the law firm of Peter G. Angelos, to pay David Segee, Jeff Conine, Sidney Ponson during that era that he lost. He was losing his ass. And yeah. Masson and the Nationals are what really saved him at that point financially. Because he couldn't save himself because he made so many enemies in the city.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, and it's understandable. And you know, we've seen it in New York, you know, where the son takes over for his father, here Hal Steinbrenner taking over for George. And yes, the Yankees still spend a lot of money, but they don't operate in the same way that they did when George was here. And that's a conscious decision by Hal to not repeat the mistakes of his father, who, you know, for all the sanitized you know, versions of George that we hear now, you know, George was kind of crazy. I mean, he fired in the '80s, just look at what he did in the '80s. He was nuts. He fired everybody. There was no consistency of vision. They traded all young guys, impetuous. It took Gene Michael to, you know, when George was gone for a few years to kind of get things under control. And then even then it got kind of, you know, it was still running away that Hal didn't like. So the point
fear
is
and
that,
tyranny,
like,
pretty much, right?
I mean, yeah, really the point is that sometimes when the son takes over, he's very conscious of the mistakes or the troubles that his father may have had and wanted to avoid them. So maybe that is where the idea of being more fiscally within your means, so to speak, comes from.
Tyler Kepner covers real baseball. Dude, we haven't talked at all about the first place Orioles and 30 games over 500 and whether they can be caught and whether they have enough pitching and whether they did enough of the trading deadline, which is also a financial issue for the Orioles as to whether they can be good enough and whether they would be attractive enough for a Verlander or a Scherzer at the trading deadline. They weren't. Where are you on the team? And Flaherty and, you know, guys coming back and Means, and do they have enough pitching and can they be good enough to win a tournament in October?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the Royals showed a few years ago that any team can win, you know, regardless of your payroll. You know, that's a model that could maybe work. I mean, you get Cano and Batista, if they, you know, protect all the leads and save all the games that they should, then, you know, then they've got a good shot. I mean, certainly they can hit, and Flaherty is a big wild card. I mean, he's always had, like, great talent. I mean, I think the Orioles have seen already just, you know, the good and the bad. He can have some starts where he's great and somewhere he's like, you know, who is this guy? So, you know, that's sort of a high risk, high reward guy. And if you get the good side of him, you know, that can go a long way. So can they win? I mean, anybody can win. I don't know if they'd be the favorites because we haven't seen it, but you know, I think we've all seen certain teams that are young. I mean, remember the 03 Marlins coming in with very little experience and just shocking the world, or the 02 Angels. They weren't young necessarily, but they had no playoff experience. So sometimes experience can be overrated. But boy, I can't wait. I mean, it's been a long time since the Orioles have made a serious run. I mean, they got to the LCS in 14, but didn't win any games. So I could see it. I mean, because young players, they can surprise you, and because we've never seen what they can do on that stage, I'd like it if they had a little more veteran influence in there. But you know, I'd take my chances with that group.
The Elias thing's fascinating for me, having had some geniuses around here like Pat Gillick, and even on the football side with Ozzie Newsome in regard to turning water into wine. The plan was to really stink and stink badly, and they did. And there aren't a whole lot of franchises that could ever or should ever be bragging about how many 1-1s they have, because 1-1s don't come easy. But then they have to bear fruit. And certainly not just the 1-1s here, whether it's, you know, the Cowsers or the late first round guys, they're geniuses in some way about baseball. And you have spent a lifetime chasing these people who think they're geniuses or spend a lot of money. And in the case of the Yankees buying things, this has been a different way to grow it. Elias has really proven something here to get this team on the cusp of doing something that we haven't seen around here. This is the greatest gathering of young Oriole talent of not just my lifetime, in the history of the franchise.
Yeah. And there's more to come, right? I mean, you know, there's a lot of, you know, waves of talent still percolating down below. So you know, that's the hope, that you can keep this thing rolling, not just for one group of guys, but for one plus. And then, you know, so that's the one thing about this is that you know, I know that it's only natural to think about the long-term future and to worry about the viability of keeping everybody together and all that. But this run is kind of just starting, and you know, you're going to have a few years anyway where you don't really have to worry about that too much. So, you know, I can't tell if a fan base how to feel, but it's probably best to just be in the moment with these dudes and just be excited and love them, because they are fun. And to see the, you know, the bird bath out there, and to see the way that city comes alive. It's such a great American baseball city with a great tradition and smart fans and an amazing setting. So, I mean, yeah, it's great. And Elias, to your point, is a really smart guy. You know, he learned a lot from the good and the bad from Houston. And most of it was really good. The thing about Houston is that they were doing things that that nobody else was really doing. They were way on the cutting edge of a lot of stuff, and now the rest of the league caught up to them. So the question is, what, you know, where can the Orioles distinguish themselves the way Houston distinguished itself in player development particularly? So that's the stuff that's going on down below. He had a lot of infrastructure stuff that he had to modernize and get up to speed, and I think they've done that. He's done a fantastic job. And it's the question is now, you know, you can gather all the talent, but, you know, it's putting it together and getting a good cohesive group. And they do seem to have that. So, you know, definitely he's been great.
Tyler Kepner and I have been in many rooms together, but we've never like sort of formally met, although we were together back in 83 at the Vet, as I remember it, in October. I've seen your pictures as well. I got to share my picture of the Fanatic and the Oriole Bird feuding at second base on 33rd Street that I took from the dugout, you know, over top, looking at Pete Rose and all those guys. I hope that we have a World Series here in, about 7-8 weeks, and that I can buy you a crab cake, proper crab cake, none of that Philadelphia crab fraud, none of that crap, something with some real meat in it, Kepner, all right? So we will continue to keep the orange flame burning down here in the thoughts of postseason baseball. It's almost pinched me. I mean, it's August, and we're not even talking football here, unprecedented in 25 years, man. The whole city's a little upside down about all of this with Lamar and the Orioles. It's been fun around here after the plague, brother.
That's great. That's great. It should be. You know, you love seeing it. And boy, wouldn't it be something to have 40 years later to have another Phillies Orioles World Series, man. I'd sign up for that. That'd be a lot of fun. Easy travel and some really vivid memories for those of us who were little guys maybe back in 83, but who still remember it very well.
You and I could camp out halfway in Newark, Delaware, and go tax-free, and we'll do that. Tyler Kepner joins us here from the New York Times. Now with The Athletic, I guess folks will be finding you over there. Any shout-out you want to give to The Athletic? I know you've been a reader for a long time.
Yeah, I love it. I'm really excited to you know, to be going over there. I mean, it's like getting called up to an all-star team. You know, I mean, I my favorite sports writer growing up and even still now is Jason Stark. He's a good friend and a mentor to me, and just to be on the same team with Jason and Ken Rosenthal and just so many great beat writers and national guys and editors and columnists. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know they don't, you know, they don't cover every team every day, but they cover a lot of teams every day, and they cover the sport the way nobody else does. And I'll have to start saying we instead of they, because you know, I started mid-September and I can't wait. It's the place to be as far as I'm concerned for sports writers today.
Brother, as a kid, I was at the side of Tim Kirchen and Richard Justice and Ken Rosenthal, very much Ken Rosenthal. And when you mentioned Jason Stark, I mean, he did my show before game three of the 1993 World Series from the carpet down on the Vet when I was doing radio 30 years ago. So, you know, all these years later, to have all of y'all gathered with Bunting in Baltimore under a starlit October night, let a kid dream. Tyler, take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the time. Really appreciate the insights. You know, John doesn't sit with anybody, so him spending time with you, it means a lot that you would spend some time with us and at least tell our fans, you know, a little bit about what's going on, because we're all trying to figure it out, man.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks a lot. It's awesome to see the Orioles back and alive right now. And you know, yeah, I mean, the name of your show, right? Positive. I try to stay positive about it. You know, remember, a lot of this is politics. A lot of this is just trying to get what you want when you can get it. And, you know, I think Mike, I mean, I trust Mike Elias's vision and the, you know, the fact that this is a very good situation to have going, and they're going to want to keep it business wise and baseball wise going for a while.
The interesting thing that I'll be chronicling, whether they win or lose, is Elias has to go down the hallway and get money from John at some point for players. At some point, he hasn't had to do that yet. He, you know, he set a budget. It's all cheap. It's all on, you know, we're going to scout. At some point, they're going to have to pay somebody and make decisions on that. And that's really where the decision-making of John Angelos begins. Tyler Kepner, find him out on the interwebs. Find him at The Athletic. Find him for a limited time at the New York Times. Make sure you find that piece of him sitting with John Angelos that has been circulating out on social media. I'm at the Pappas next Tuesday, the 29th, and we're on County Executive Stuart Pittman will join us. We're celebrating 50 years of the Maryland Lottery, 25 years of Baltimore Positive, in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore.